Emergency LA Podcast. Hayes Davenport, Scott Frazier, and Alyssa Walker. We have convened on a Tuesday night because you have these institutions that you trust, that you put your faith in just as like an American. And you come to rely, like, you know, your daily interactions with them, you come to rely on these institutions. And then you just wake up one day and you think it's going to be a normal day. And you find a tampon in your Frappuccino.
The institution being Starbucks.
Yes.
Not just any Starbucks.
That you're speaking of.
A Starbucks in a Target, which we all know,
an institution inside an institution.
Bedrock of every community.
So we're going. We've been doing long episodes recently. We're going to do 4 hours on the Tampuccino. I do want to talk about that, actually. But this is an historic day. And we are going to talk about the history that was made today and the person specifically heretofore known as Council Member A. Now
no longer
unmasked, and we have learned his real name in his FBI charging document, and that name is Weezer. My man is a lawbreaker.
Bravo.
Somebody
waiting. We've been waiting for that.
Somebody pitched it, and I had been hoping to do that one. I forget, someone suggested it on Twitter as well. Maybe I can find who suggested that. So Jose Huizar arrested, cuffed. We didn't get a public perp walk, but for the first time since we have been doing this podcast, a sitting council member has been arrested on a range of charges. This is something we knew was going to happen. I didn't think it was going to happen this quickly. We can get into that in more detail. But this is the culmination of an investigation that started in November of 2018 when his office and residence were raided by the FBI. I remember we had started the podcast not long before that, and I was thinking like, oh, I didn't think anything this exciting was gonna happen while we were doing this.
You know what? It actually is so great that we started the podcast a couple months before that happened, so we didn't seem like we were cynically...
Just bandwagon podcasters. And then the investigation went dormant for a really long time, and we complained a lot on this show about how we weren't getting any news on it, and it looked like he was just going to finish out his last term.
Man, so close.
Really close. He didn't make it to January because he has now been arrested. There was a 14-0 vote today by the remaining members of the council to remove him from the council, which they cannot fully do. Some of Jose Huizar still remains, Alyssa. What actually happened today?
Like, he can still get paid.
Yes.
He still gets paid, but then Mayor Garcetti said that he should be replaced immediately by the democratically elected successor.
Right.
Yeah, but
so does this mean
they don't have a mechanism to do that
unless he resigns?
Yeah, like what? Yeah. So what does that mean? So he's just basically calling for him to resign, yes, but they can't actually take him out of office.
Garcetti is just saying something that he thinks should happen, the way that like tens of thousands of Angelenos have been saying that they think Garcetti should resign. There's no like. They don't actually have like an immediate way to make that the fact of reality.
But we do have a successor is ready in the wings.
Yes.
Probably.
Yes.
He's been on this day just sitting outside.
Yeah. You said, Scott, put me in, coach. There is real put me in, coach.
That was Alyssa.
That was Alyssa. Sorry.
Yeah. But I mean, there. So if you think about it, though, within the span of the past couple weeks, Nuri Martinez had already politely requested that Jose Huizar refrain from showing his face at city council meetings, even via Zoom. He was no longer on any committees. That's been the case for a long time at this point. So there's not really anything left for him except collecting the paycheck. So when you say like all he can do at this point is collect the paycheck, that's kind of important to him.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing we know from reading all these FBI documents.
It's really important that
he has expenses. That's a phrase that he repeats a lot.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't have, I mean, the thing that I worried about was that for people who don't know, there was an election. There was a primary election in March. Kevin De Leon is the council member elect right now because he didn't need a runoff. He wanted to not have a runoff. But then there wouldn't be some situation where we'd have like a special election just to have someone else finish out this term.
No.
Or they could appoint somebody to fill in for him through the rest of the term.
It's all fake. It's totally arbitrary. But they let when Felipe Fuentes suddenly quit a few years ago, the council, they just let that seat stay open forever. And they, and you know, they let Greg Smith, like it's all totally arbitrary. And it seems like the consensus is that De Leon will just get to be council member a few months early.
Well, it's at the, it is at the discretion of the council president. So when Fuentes left the council very abruptly, we still don't have a ton of clarity on what happened there.
By the way, we might want to look back at that one.
we might want to investigate
We've
that.
We've got a few more questions now.
When Fuentes left the council very suddenly, council president at the time, Herb Wesson, like you're saying, Hayes, decided to leave that seat vacant because he said, I can represent, even though he's a council district 10, right? He's mid-city and south of there. And Fuentes was in the valley. He said, I can represent council district 7 just as well as if they actually had a council member. So I'm not going to bother holding a special election or appointing anybody, which are his other two options as council president. Now, I mean, in this case, in the event that there's a vacancy, which again doesn't look as like that is going to happen unless Huizar is actually convicted before his term expires, seems kind of unlikely. I guess if he enters a guilty plea, that's probably the most likely scenario is if that happens, then being guilty of a felony, he will automatically be removed from the council. Mm-hmm. But if there is a vacancy, Nuri Martinez, who is now the council president, has these options of either letting the seat stay vacant, appointing somebody. Obviously, you would appoint Kevin De Leon. You don't really gain anything by appointing somebody else for a couple months. And you, by the way,
not in that office.
Not only do you not gain anything, you really, really piss off Kevin De Leon, who is about to be council member, regardless of what you do. It would be kind of a silly thing to do, not to appoint him, basically. So that I think would definitely happen.
His wife, though, I think would be a good appointee.
That would be interesting. Let him start campaigning for mayor.
As if, you know,
she put in a lot of work. She should get to be there for a second. So let's go over just like a quick catch up on how we got to this point. Like I said, Councilmember Jose Huizar from the 14th district, which covers most of downtown LA and Boyle Heights, we knew he'd been under investigation by the FBI for multiple years. His office was raided in November 2018. And in the last few months, we've seen a number of guilty pleas from other figures in this case, people that represented what has been called by the FBI the CD14 enterprise, CD14 criminal enterprise.
And now
we know the name that... So stupid.
That's pretty dumb.
I want Alyssa to say it. The name that the FBI has been calling this investigation.
Casino Loyal.
Operation Casino Loyal.
And everybody thought they were just saying Casino Royale on the call. And then it was like an amazing, wait, they are so much more clever than we expected them to.
I would almost say too clever. It feels like it's just too many ideas.
It's too much. Yeah, I agree with Hayes on this one.
Loyal. And they're also not loyal at all. Every figure in this case, now that we have seen in the investigation that came out today, almost everyone at some point says, like, well, if I get in trouble, I'll just say that my boss did it.
I was actually just kind of, I don't know, thinking about the way that you have this criminal organization, right? This racketeering, bribery ring in City Hall.
Yes.
It's kind of funny because exactly what you are talking about kind of reveals why there's such an element of violence in actual organized crime, right? Yeah. Because like in the absence of that, all these people are kind of like, well, there's this guy, he's paying me a little bit of money. If he stops or he asks me to do something too stupid, then yeah, I'll just roll on him. Why not? Why would I go down for this guy who's making me call him boss all the time?
So
boss.
Yes, you alluded to it, Scott. It's a bribery ring. It is primarily developers, but like people in general associated with the real estate industry, funneling money to the council member, to his staff members, to intermediaries to get their projects approved. And what we found in the document today, that it was very important to Jose Huizar that he dangle the possibility that he would not approve their projects unless he got hundreds of thousands of dollars. And what we learned in the recent guilty pleas before today was that the initial need for this money came about from a sexual harassment settlement after a lawsuit filed against Jose Huizar. And the amount, was it $600,000, $500,000?
Yeah, the settlement amount was $570,000.
$570,000, which he settled privately, was not, in the unusual case, was not paid for with taxpayer money. He elected to pay for it himself, so it wouldn't be public, like the discovery in the case wouldn't be made public. And so he needed very quickly $570,000. And so he came up with this scheme with a number of, at the time, the sitting, what was Ray Chan when they first came up with the scheme?
He was the interim general manager for the Department of Building and Safety.
So they, along with an associate, George Chang, came up with this idea to basically extort developers into giving Huizar a huge, huge amount of money, just that we know of. You have to assume that there are a few cases that have not been made public. To also funnel money into the future political prospects of his wife, Rochelle Huizar, so they could keep this operation going as long as possible. I think it was referred to in the documents today as a 20-year plan. Is that right?
Yeah, the 20 years being, if you think about it, 8 years of Huizar being not in city council. He's been in city council for 15 years, but 8 years of being the head of planning and land use management, and then 12 years of Rochelle.
So let's talk about, Scott, how much of this it's a 172 page charging document that was released by the FBI today or by the U.S. attorney. Right. How much have you gotten through? Talk about what you have discovered from this document.
Well, blessedly, like the last 50 pages or so of it are attachments that are previously released documents. So I've gotten through the majority of it in terms of parsing the actual information contained within. A lot of it obviously is not fully restatements, but a lot of it is sort of rephrasing of information that could have been gleaned from the Esparza filings, the Justin Kim filings, and even some of it from the original Englander filings. So to just run down what we get from this document that we didn't know already. Like you said, Huizar is being accused, has not entered even a plea at this point. Although earlier today, he posted a thing on Instagram.
It was last night. Yes. Wait, I'm gonna check that again to see if it's still.
He posted something on Instagram.
Generating the comments.
It was the patron saint of the wrongfully accused. I have no idea which saint to be honest.
Still there.
And also, he was on Twitter. Seemed like he knew he was about to be arrested. And at least some of what he did on Twitter. I want to go through his likes, actually. But friend of the show, Kenny Ung, who was on our bonus podcast the other day, revealed that Huizar last night liked one of his tweets.
Yeah. In the late hours.
It's just like, it just makes me realize that that's the day I know that I'm about to be arrested and go to prison potentially for 20 years.
Get some Kenny tweets.
Yes, I will just be liking Kenny's tweets.
Well, so if you, this is something that a lot of people have been speculating about, right? Was, is Huizar cooperating? Is he going? That's something that I know we've talked about before. Is he cooperating? Is there a possibility that he's not going to get arrested because he's given up somebody else? Yes, I do believe that he was made aware that he would be arrested this morning in the same way that we saw of other members of this criminal conspiracy, that they surrendered to authorities without incident. Mitch Englander being famously one of those who surrendered to federal authorities downtown.
Former council member Mitch Englander, yeah.
Does appear that the FBI was telling people, we will arrest you if you do not surrender by this date. And Huizar seems to be the first person who did not take them up on the offer to surrender himself to authorities.
It's so metal. He is a committed metalhead.
He sure is.
There's hundreds of comments on this Instagram post, but there's a very recent one from Andy Bales from the Union Rescue Mission. Man. It's like, I'm praying for you, and has all these like Bible verses on there. So at least one person is not totally trashing his feet and trying to give him some peace.
So it does seem long way of saying it does seem like he intends when he is arraigned to plead not guilty.
Yeah, sure does.
He, after being arrested by special agents at his home in Boyle Heights, the U.S. Attorney's Office released this document, which does contain some information that we didn't have before. It's interesting because it does pin as the date of like the start of this, criminal organization as 2013. Mm-hmm. And, I think there's still not total clarity on that. Like you mentioned, Hayes, that it was initiated by his need to quickly get cash for this Godoy lawsuit, which was filed in summer of 2013.
Yep.
However, that is actually also coincidentally the time when he became the head of the Planning and Land Use Management Committee.
Sure. This is actually very similar to the fact that we reopened the city right around the time there were mass protests. And we don't know exactly where all these cases are now coming
from. So I think it is possible, and it is at this point still beyond the scope of this investigation, that Huizar, who was on the Plum Committee prior to 2013, but at the time it was chaired by Gil Cedillo's predecessor in Council District 1, Ed Reyes. It's totally possible that Huizar was doing things that were illegal at that point in time. At this point, it extends beyond the scope of the investigation. Where we pick up is this this need for $600,000. He uses that money to establish collateral for a loan so that he can pay the private settlement that will keep any details of his relationship with Francine Godoy or, according to her complaint, his repeated sexual harassment of her secret from the public so that he can win re-election against Gloria Molina in 2015. From that point in time, from 2013 on, it's a pattern of extended, very serious corruption. We, in 2013, get, I think, the most important new piece of information to date in the in these filings, which is simultaneously to the attempts that Huizar and his sort of like co-lieutenant Ray Chan were making to settle this lawsuit privately. Huizar was also engaged in efforts to torpedo former mayor Antonio Villaraigosa's realignment plan for city departments that would have resulted in the consolidation of the Department of Building and Safety and the city's planning department, which was then under a director, Lo Grande, who was later, as former deputy mayor Rick Cole pointed out on Twitter, to me, who was later charged with the largest ethics violation in the history of the city.
Right. Lest you think that anyone involved in this has not been charged with crimes. So you're like, who cares? The like Department of Building Safety merged with the planning department. Like, who gives a shit? And who gives a shit is Ray Chan, who is running the Department of Building and Safety at the time. And knows that he will lose his job and his power as his department is absorbed. So he essentially, what we learned today is he recruited Jose Huizar, the council member, to speak on his behalf, which Huizar did. Then Ray Chan texted him that he was a beautiful speaker and that he was crying.
Yep.
He says, there are actually tears in my eyes right now. And it appears to have worked. And then the chatter among everyone at City Hall, according to this, the U.S. attorney, is that Huizar is the guy who saved Ray Chan's job. And they toast to this.
Yeah.
In the document, there's a little scene. I mean, this is, it's
Chan
a movie.
Seems like, he, Chan seems like, it does seem like a movie, doesn't it? It's almost like,
I hope this gets made into a movie.
It's like a post-COVID Irishman, honestly. Chan seems like an emotional kind of guy, honestly. And so the image of him toasting with a tear in his eye, the man who saved his career, is pretty great. I think that there is a very key significance to this moment in the, in these filings, which is very, like you said, very early on in what we know about at least this high level of a criminal conspiracy within City Hall. U.S. Attorney Nick Hanna for the Central District called this one of the largest public corruption cases that has ever been investigated in the city of Los Angeles, which, if you know anything about Los Angeles, says a lot. That says a lot. We've got them piled high here. So this, there's a lot of competition. But the importance, I think, of this is when you look at Villaraigosa's planned restructuring, a lot of the impetus for that was not just the dysfunction of city government, which has often been a sort of rallying cry by opponents of elected officials. But when you have a figure like Ray Chan, who is saying, my whole thing is to come in and be business friendly and to be, he described himself as part of the mayor's sales team, et cetera, when he became the head of DBS. But part of the impetus for this restructuring is also that there was an existing, very present corruption scandal within DBS and various other departments within the city at the time. There were multiple, I believe, three different DBS inspectors who were ultimately found guilty on federal bribery charges by the FBI immediately preceding the time period that we're talking about, 2011, 2012. Then you have city government saying, we can police our own. This is always the thing that comes out when it's time to talk about reform, the insiders in City Hall are saying, you don't need to throw us out because we can police our own. Just give us a chance. Then in the fullness of time now, 8 years later, we're finding out that one of these reforms, regardless of, like I was saying, Deputy Mayor at the time, Rick Cole, was questioning on Twitter whether or not this would have been an effective reform. To me, that's somewhat beside the point, because really what's happening is Angelenos are seeing we can't trust any of these people who are telling us that they have the ability or the will to police their own. What actually happened was one corrupt official said to a corrupt elected official, I don't want this to happen because it will harm my career. And the other one said, hey, don't worry, I can take care of that for you, and you just do me a favor. The favor ends up being getting him out of what appears to be a pattern of sexual misconduct in his office and allowing him to be reelected, and then allowing him to plan the like total domination, the taking over the world, as his Lieutenant George Esparza calls it, within CD14 for the next 8 years, however long.
That was another thing we learned today, is that the council member, not exactly chastened by the $600,000 settlement he had to pay out from a sexual harassment lawsuit, or maybe he was, and he's just like, well, now from now on, I'm just going to be paying for it, I guess. Or no, he like, there are so many affairs, and they're not like specifically delineated. They're impossible to keep track of, but he has these developers and their associates like paying for hotels for him to sleep with the women he's having an affair with. They pay for a trip to Cabo with, or no, he asked them to pay for a trip to Cabo. I don't know if that trip was ever actually consummated. Right. So a lot. Yes. So that kind of origin story of this beautiful friendship we learned about today between Huizar and Ray Chan, and this like this bond that they created for the ensuing 7 years. We also, there's some new projects, some literally new developments in this document. We have heard about many different projects and other guilty pleas where a developer wants certain zone changes and wants certain approvals, usually in Huizar's district downtown, usually a hotel near LA Live, and with the Lux Hotel. Scott, list off some of the developments that we heard, that we knew about before today.
Before today, we had 940 South Hill, a condo project in South Park. We had the Lux Hotel, as you mentioned, the LA Grand Hotel, which was the one developed by Shenzhen New World Group, going to be the tallest west of the Mississippi. Mm-hmm. We had the Oceanwide Plaza, Metropolis, and think that, oh no, the Reef was the other one. Those were all the ones that were publicly, I think, either directly implicated or which you could determine based on the facts of the
filing. And the Cambria Hotel, that was out there
and
too.
And the Cambria,
right?
And the Cambria Hotel.
So many. But we did learn about a new one today in the Arts District, a domestic developer. Previously, these have been foreign developers, mostly the Chinese, but this is a developer called Carmel Partners, not named specifically in the document, but it's not hard to figure out, developing a gigantic, especially for the Arts District, residential office retail complex on.
Yeah, I pulled this one.
Yeah.
This one. So this was on Mateo, that little street that has like, is Blue Bottle still open? Are any of these places still open? I don't know. It's that little strip that's kind of like has a lot of little stores along it in the Arts District. And it, I'm looking at a story from 2018 where it was originally proposed as a 13 story tower and then somehow is now a 35 story tower.
And you can see.
And this,
From the text exchange between some executive, I don't know if it's the CEO, but some executive at Carmel and these intermediaries with Weaves are where they're like, do you think he almost literally said, do you think he likes us? Do you think we have like a good enough position with him to get this through? Because it's like a huge deal. This is like in the arts district is kind of an unprecedented development. And then after it does, the whole process plays out as it has with many other developers that we've seen with Huizar, and they get the approval. And then the developer brags about having pulled this off and says they found a mass email to the owners, like the executive of the company sent an email to the owners and other employees writing, great news. We just received final unanimous approval for the project by city council, blah, blah, blah. Our obligations related to rent, parenthetical, affordable housing restrictions and union involvement are minimal compared to other future projects in the area. Executive M also touted the entitlement of the tallest building of the arts district by 3 times in a wealthy, opinionated hipster community. A truly amazing accomplishment.
And I will note the at least the last thing they were required to build was an affordability. It was 11% affordable units.
He's right. That is a lower obligation.
Very minimal.
Than you would.
Well, when you have such an influencer audience, you don't need to build affordable housing. Come on.
I mean, so much of like... It's so on the nose, like everything that's like happening in LA over the last, especially in that in downtown and that like surrounding area. It's too much. Like it's too bald.
It's like that's why it has to be a movie, because it's just it couldn't be real unless it was real.
Yeah.
So it has to be.
But it's also too stupid and obvious to be a movie like yes. this, like.
Right. It, no. I mean, it does. It seems to just really reward the most cynical knee-jerk reaction that anybody might have had at any point in time. Like, if you go back to when this Carmel Partners project was moving through, I guarantee you will find a raft of people saying this is evidence of the pay-to-play culture in City Hall, and you're just like, you know what? You're just somebody commenting online. It turns out accurate. The dead on accurate.
Absolutely. And, you know, they cast a pretty wide net with accusations. Yeah. Pay-to-play. But they're probably right about all of those too.
Right.
I'm not going to laugh now.
And the point that is made in this document is that the particular power of the chair of the Planning and Land Use Management Committee, we've talked a little bit about this in the past. We've talked about the importance of the chair, in this case, Huizar, being able to hear appeals for certain projects. We know that there are a lot of actors. Creed LA is one that has been called out in these documents, who put up CEQA appeals specifically to extract concessions,
extorting,
essentially.
And extortionist.
Yeah, right, exactly. So that's what's known as green mailing, basically like pretending to go after environmental concessions when what you really want is labor or other concessions made by the developers. So Creed is one such group. We know that there are others. They put these appeals forward. The appeals, for some godforsaken reason, are made against decisions that are made by the city planning commission or the local area planning commissions. Those then go to the Planning and Land Use Committee, which is sat on by legislators, and then ultimately to the city council. That is an important lever in and of itself. One thing that the document released today points out also, though, is that if Huizar doesn't want something to get agendized, then it will just not happen for however long that he decides to stonewall it. This is it's already to the point, because we've already seen it happen in other filings that we've received, where developers have said, we need X amount of loan financing in order to make this development pencil out. And that needs to happen by this date or we lose whatever work we've done on getting this loan.
Yep.
So Huizar has a lot of leverage if he chooses to use it in a nefarious way, which obviously he did multiple times with essentially every developer who came into town. So it is a powerful post from which to draw these sort of illegal bribes if you are so inclined.
The whole document, I would say, is actually worth reading. It is really entertaining. There are multiple conversations where people wonder if they will get in trouble what they're doing, not because they don't know it's wrong. They obviously know it's wrong. They just wonder if they'll ever get caught.
They're kind of like, are we good at this?
Yes. The answer is very obvious to the reader. There's a real dramatic irony that they are very bad at it and yet still did get away with it for a while. There's also a moment where in all the other guilty pleas, we've seen so many texts from Huizar to his staff members, to other associates, trying to arrange the meeting where he gets the cash. He really,
yeah,
it's very important to him that we are punctual with delivering the cash that we agreed to and on the agreed upon date. And so what's very funny in this document that was revealed today, when the FBI interviewed Huizar about one of the many bribery schemes, he said, related to the hundreds of thousands of dollars cash payment provided to his staff member, George Esparza, Huizar told Esparza, "That is yours. I do not want it." And also said that Huizar had never asked Esparza for any of that cash. And, right after we've seen so many texts from Huizar being like, "Hey, where's that cash?"
That's so great. I love it. I love the quote that they have from Huizar's interview because it sounds like he's having like an allergic reaction upon being presented the money. He's like, "That is yours. Keep that away from me. I would not touch that." very believable, very good liar.
Yeah.
There are other interesting aspects of this. Of course, with Englander, the Mitch Englander filing, there were escort services involved. It does appear that Huizar, at least it is the allegation of the federal investigators that Huizar was also the recipient of escort services while he was in Las Vegas. You mentioned, Hayes, that he was there on numerous occasions with a woman with whom he was having an affair. That I would imagine it certainly lines up in time with the allegations that were made in the Myra Alvarez and Pauline Medina civil suits.
Yeah.
Not really civil. There's not like a monetary benefit for them to make that claim. They were kind of just throwing it in there because it was obviously salacious and maybe would make him more likely to settle, which, oh, hey, he did. He has an agreement to settle with both of those civil complainants, Myra Alvarez, I believe, for $150,000 and Pauline Medina for $50,000, not finalized yet. But
talk about what we learned about those cases specifically and what was offered to him in addition to money from these developers. Did you see that?
Which cases?
So,
oh, the opposition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Please, you talk about that.
One of these developers, specifically the an executive at Carmel Partners, it's very heavily implied, offered Huizar, in addition to huge amounts of money, opposition research on the women who had filed sexual discrimination and harassment lawsuits against him.
Yeah. And one imagines that that likely had something to do with the complainant Myra Alvarez, who is currently an employee of Wendy Carrillo.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I imagine Pauline Medina doesn't even live in the state anymore.
Right.
I really strongly imagine that there's something that they are alluding to there that would be related to the assemblywoman, but
her potential future campaign for that seat that right. maybe didn't end up happening. Yeah.
It is I will say that like most of what we have alleged in the civil suits has in some way been validated at this point in time.
Yeah.
Obviously the use of city resources to plan Rachelle Ray Huizar's bid for the city council, that definitely happened. We have plenty of evidence that that was the case. The affair with a staffer, again, so much evidence to substantiate that mm-hmm. at this point. Something, though, that I think hasn't been reported on before today's document is the what appears to be the Shenzhen New World executive using his connections with Huizar to try to get his son into USC, which is...
Yeah, that was... How does that even work?
Which, I mean, well...
Ties to USC?
Does Huizar... I imagine everybody in city government has many, many and various ties to USC.
But it's so easy to get in. We already know that. You just pay different people.
An international student too, when their policy for so many years was literally just like, write us a check and your kid can come here.
And we know about this process.
Right, the same person who wanted to give him the $600,000 for his sexual harassment case wanted help getting into USC for his.
Yeah.
It's the same person. So it's like, you had $500,000 for that, but not to give to an endowment. Yeah.
Just hire the guy who will Photoshop your kid's head on a water polo player.
Right.
You don't need to go through the councilman.
Various other, I think, things that we should probably discuss at this point. It does seem like Ray Chan's indictment or arrest is imminent.
That's what I want to talk about. And like specifically the fact that that one hasn't happened yet.
Right. Yeah. So we still have, I mean, it's pretty clear, right? There's no...
Given the substance of just like how thick this this arrest sheet is for Huizar, I would imagine one of the primary things that is holding up arrests at this point is just how long it takes to generate the documents. I think that is a substantial undertaking.
Like printing them out, you mean? No, just
kidding. I have a salacious other possibility, which is that, I mean, it says in the document that there are other witnesses, subjects, and targets of this case, but this document is only pertaining to Huizar's activities. Ray Chan was extremely well connected in City Hall. And there's been a real narrative building when it comes to like how the United States has been unfurling this case. And I think it's probably, you know, Ray Chan is like literally individual one in this document. Right. I think it is possible that his indictment absolutely going to happen, but is being held off on because it does implicate others. Like,
that's interesting.
Okay.
I'm not sure exactly. If it indicated knowledge of what he was doing on behalf of other elected officials, and I just want to get out in the open right now. Jessica Craven, friend of the show, was posting that Herb Wesson in a debate tonight was asked about Huizar. And he said, I just have to ask, did I miss something? Because I had no idea. That is such bullshit.
The least credible denial ever.
What does he mean? He had no idea this was happening.
He had no idea any of it.
He had no idea any of this was happening.
He's basically saying the way that it has been widely reported for the last 5 years that Wesson called him called Huizar, his brother and his best friend on council. He's saying, if I had known any of this, I wouldn't have said that, basically.
Yeah, I would never.
I would not be friends with a criminal.
Why did my best friend not tell me this?
Is what he's trying to say.
My BFF.
And his chief of staff is implicated in this. Doesn't really come up in the document that came out today.
Well, right.
Today,
yes.
So
there's that, too.
Could be an additional shoe.
So investigation is ongoing. Hayes, you referred to this as the culmination of a years long investigation. It is, in fact, it's not an investigation that they have said that they've wrapped up at this point in time. Still active, and the U.S. attorney, the head attorney at the Central District, was asked point blank whether or not there were other council members or elected officials who were going to be arrested as part of these conspiracy charges, and he declined to answer that. So it is entirely possible that we will see that happen. Anything is on the table at this point, pretty much. This is such a damning indictment of the credibility of city council in every conceivable way. Hayes, you had said online today in a way that I thought was very well summed up, that it is only because city council members protect their own so ferociously that now you end up with a sitting city council member being dragged away in handcuffs, basically.
How easy would it have been to, on the day of this raid happening, to just be like, hey, I would encourage either for the council member to speak publicly about this, just say anything to reassure me that nothing's wrong, or step down pending what appears to be a very serious investigation. That could have happened 2 years ago. Instead, nobody said shit. And they worked with him for that entire time, acted like nothing was going on. Even when the first guilty plea dropped, nobody said anything.
Yeah.
It took the second guilty plea for them to finally say, this is disgusting. I'm appalled.
Well, yeah, I'm so appalled. And then, of course, it took until he was arrested by the FBI for them to act to suspend him. I will say, too, just two things that I think are very indicative of where we're at with city council right now. Today, Nuri Martinez and her colleagues on the city council acted with what they would have you believe is like appropriate urgency on removing Huizar as an acting member of the council. Mm-hmm. They said that it was their duty to protect the integrity of the council, et cetera, et cetera. And they are all shocked by the behavior of the council member. It is a disgrace to all Angelenos. But how much has it actually changed as a result of that? If you want to know the answer to that question, look several seats down the horseshoe to John Lee,
yes,
who is equally implicated in a federal corruption cover-up.
Yes.
And city council, much as they did for Huizar, is ignoring it. They have not changed their behavior.
But they will eventually get to the point of just being just shocked.
And can you believe that there was, surely not two.
Well, technically three.
Yeah, right. God, who knows how many?
It really
honestly,
is impossible to keep track. Just one council member who was or indicted that we just forgot about. Alyssa, what's your takeaway from this? What are you thinking?
I mean, I know that's like we're laughing about it, and the bags of money and the liquor boxes and the secret bathroom meetings are all like really comical. Mm-hmm. But this, in the context of what is happening right now, made me really sad today. Like there was an hour or two where I was like, how many lives have been impacted by this is just what we know. These are just like the major developments. These are like the giant money changing hands situations. You look at somewhere like downtown and Boyle Heights and like all these different neighborhoods that have undergone tremendous change since he's been in office, and how many other communities and groups of people were adversely impacted and possibly forever, their lives forever changed by the decisions of this person and this like arsenal he built around him to basically like weaponize the built environment in this city. And it made me realize that it's, you're like what we've just been saying, like they all really have to go. I think that's what Scott said at one point, like prove to us that you should not all have to go. I think it should be the discussion we have going forward, because there's nobody has any terms to stand on in this city right now, especially in light of, you know, everything that we've seen over the last few weeks.
Yeah, too. It is too late. And it's always like, it's so reactive. It's never while it's happening. It's never during the years and years going by while the investigation was going on that like nobody spoke up. It's too late. That like it's the same as the response to homelessness, to climate change, to like,
right. Well, it's all related, because it all has to do with these decisions that we were making that had to go through this completely fucked up system that we have for getting things built or not built in this city. Yes. That could have changed those things. And I think one thing a lot of people were pointing out was like, oh, he was so good on livable street stuff. He was so good on walking and biking.
Yes, like, the urbanists are conflicted.
Like, yeah, you have to be like, oh, you know, he fooled you all, you know, by liking that bike lane.
Yeah. I just want to use this emergency episode to get on the record with my Tampuccino theory. My theory is multifold. So for the two people that haven't heard this amazing story, Bill Mulugan, who we just talked about in our last episode, Fox 11 haircut at Bill Fox LA, very unbiased and yet exclusively pro cop reporter, posted a disgusting picture of something being pulled out of a Frappuccino cup with a straw. It's breaking. Sources tell me an off-duty LAPD officer allegedly found a tampon halfway through his Frappuccino at a Starbucks in Diamond Bar. And so I guess to answer the question of like, why would anyone, like if he was off-duty, then why would someone do that to him? But it turns out he used his Police Protective League union credit card. And so that's what made them do the Frappuccino that way. I don't, when you have a
Frappuccino, it was an online order. You wouldn't even know that it was a special credit.
Even if it, yes. And even if it wasn't an online order, I think for Frappuccinos, the person at the register does not make them. Not a Frappuccino. They'll give you like,
you also hold on to your own credit card, but that none of that would have happened. Everything is touchless, contactless, and everything is done online.
Yes.
You would not have seen the credit.
So there's a fantastic article on Vice that really my recommendation is just to read the scientific investigation that Jason Keebler, I don't know how you pronounce it, did on a motherboard where they tested putting a lot of tampons in Frappuccinos and pulled them out and saw what they looked like. And it doesn't look anything like whatever that is.
That was a very bizarre picture.
But my theory is, so Bill Mulugan accounts for people who are saying like, hey, you remember the Shake Shack thing that turned out to be like total bullshit? Are we really doing this again? And he was like, yeah. So that's why I consulted with many independent sources. None of them are named to prove that this was a legit investigation. The investigation is being carried out by the sheriff's department because, of course, no LAPD officers live in the city of LA. They all drive 4 hours to and from work every day. And so this happened in Diamond Bar. It's like the Walnut division of the sheriff's department. Bill Mulugan has a really tight relationship with the sheriff's department. He interviews Alex Villanueva personally all the time. I think we will find out, like if we do find out anything about this, Bill certainly isn't telling. But that this was a fraud perpetrated by an LAPD officer before the Shake Shack fraud had been exposed. So the timeline goes.
Timeline. Mm.
Shake Shack, scandal. LAPD officer puts what he thinks is a tampon, but is actually something else. It is Frappuccino cup.
A weird clog from his drain or something.
Takes a picture, sends it to the sheriff's department. Sheriff's department begins their investigation. Shake Shack scandal is exposed as a fraud, but the investigation has already begun. And someone in the sheriff's department, someone really stupid, which could be anyone up to and including the sheriff himself, leaked this, not really knowing how the Shake Shack hoax had played out at that point. So that, like, that makes the timeline make sense to me, because, like, why would you do this after the NYPD got so embarrassed by the Shake Shack thing? But I can't wait to see how this plays out. Target, for the record, and the Starbucks have said that they examined video, and they said that nothing appears to have gone wrong with the officer's Frappuccino. I need names. I need to know who the officer is. Like, this story, I want to be talking about this for our for the entire
Tampuccino
main episode that we do on Sunday.
We need a theme for Tampuccino.
We do.
work on that.
Why are they drinking these, like, froofy drinks?
They usually drink them, like, on duty. So that's actually, like,
I just want to say, like, basic, I don't even know. Basic physics suggests that whatever was in that straw, you are not drinking anything out of that, right? Like, there's no way that you, like, start sucking and suddenly there's...
Oh, you think he drank some of it and then...
There's no way.
It's too huge.
How would you notice
you could
it?
Not,
those things are so thick.
You could not drink a liquid. I will go on record as a Tampuccino truther. You could not drink a liquid out of that straw.
The shake thing, I could understand if something came out of the shake machine because it's in a machine, or, you know, there's, like, it wasn't cleaned or whatever. But, like, a Frappuccino, they're making those in blenders and whatever that's coming out of. Maybe it's like the powder. Maybe it's like there's, like, a cotton ball in the powder lid or something like that that they pour in there. You know how they do scoops of the powder?
And so you think that just accidentally got released into the Frappuccino?
Into the...
Very generous.
Yeah, I mean, but you think he planted something. What? I mean, I guess we don't know if it was a man or a woman.
They would have said by now... Rather than Target would have, or Starbucks would have said, rather than there was no foul play, they would have said exactly what Shake Shack said, which is we were cleaning the thing and some stuff got in. We're really sorry. But they just said they didn't do it. It's just a Frappuccino. It is made a Frappuccino. It's normal. it's a lie. And they lie about all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the leap to the tampon, I think, is just, like, incredibly insulting, because anyone who has used a tampon, and I can say this, would look at that and say that is not a tampon, because tampons are designed to absorb liquid, and that is what they are used for. So I find it just incredibly insulting. And my immediate reaction was, like, we need more people who use tampons to be law enforcement people in this city. But not actually, we don't need anyone.
And
to
also,
be
I mean, I'll include
city,
journalists in that, like, who have either used one or would be willing to consult anyone who has used one before you leak this and say, this is a picture of a tampon. Yeah,
it's insulting. I look forward to next week's Jamba Juice LAPD. Scandal.
Yeah, what, like, let's call it now.
Foreign object that is.
What did they put in it? Just like
shards of, I don't know, glass. Yeah.
A condom just full of
blood condom.
A condom, but full of blood.
Thank you for listening to our emergency episode of LA Podcast. So cathartic. It feels like the end of one story, and I'm sure the beginning of many more. We'll be back soon. Goodbye. LA Podcast. LA Podcast. LA Podcast gonna have